This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Thank you, Earl. Much appreciated, buddy. Earl got me thinking about something as he mentioned there in the update that the Nats' first pitch tonight is 6:05. The first pitches in Major League Baseball are all over the map at this point. Like, one night the Nats are playing at 7, one night at 6. I think I dig the 6:05 thing. The reason they normally play at 7 is to give commuters a chance to get to games. Well, that's
that
not
happen.
An issue.
Yeah.
So I'll do the 6 o'clock bit because the games end closer to 9 than 10, and it gives you a little bit more nighttime. Danny, you can let your hair down, fire up Netflix, and watch something else before you go to bed. But a couple of times it's caught me where it's like 6:11 or something, and I'm in the kitchen getting ready to sit down for dinner, and I'm thinking, oh, no, I got to fire on Masson real quick. It's just weird because it's not like they don't have a uniform time.
Right.
It depends on the day, weirdly. I don't know exactly how they're doing it.
I don't either, and I have to check every time, and that's not fun. I like it when it's very dependable, right? The occasional Thursday or a getaway day, we do the 4:05 bit, but for the most part, it is 7:05 every weeknight, unless they're on the dumb West Coast. Then it's Grant Paulson-style 10 o'clock, which I cannot stand. But for the most part, you know, 7:05, here it is, you chbub and FP, boom goes the dynamite, let's go to it. And now I got to figure it out every day. I got to like plan afternoon activities around when we go for a drive or go for a walk or whatever to try to tire the kids out. Whatever it is, you've got to sort of plan around. It's like, okay, I might have to miss the second and third or the fourth inning to do some kind of activity, but I need to be back down here to make sure I see Tanner Rainey get through the heart of the order. Whatever it is, right? But you got to figure out each day, and that's. I don't want to call it exhausting because there's more tiring things, but it is irritating that I never seem to know when they're playing.
It's a white-collar problem, but it's a white-collar
problem. First-world problem. Yeah, first-world problem.
We'll complain about on this show for sure. We're Grant and Danny. Welcome back. Hour number two is coming your way on 106.7 The Fan. I really appreciate you guys sticking with us. Look, I'll just say we don't normally talk about ratings or anything like that on the show. I don't really believe in celebrating when they're good or worrying when they're bad, but the fact that people are riding with us through this thing does mean a lot. You got to
cool.
work a little harder to mm-hmm. listen, and if you're using the Radio.com app or streaming, it feels good. So thank you. We appreciate it, and keep on grinding your way through this pandemic with us. Hopefully talking some sport and some other nonsense will keep you company in the middle of the day here on 106.7 The Fan. Yesterday, ESPN came out with a piece, and it was done by Bill Barnwell and a bunch of their writers on their website. Danny, you can kind of lead the way as we intro this, but I thought it was a really cool idea. They went through every single NFL team's roster mm-hmm. and picked one future Hall of Famer for each organization.
So what they did is they put them in a couple categories, right? Where it's lock, but someone that's obvious, that's clear. You know, like it's pretty much 100%. Yeah, it's Ryan Lochte. It. Like, you know it's going to happen, right? Then you've got likely, right, where you put a percentage on it. Like, someone like, for example, for the Eagles, Jason Peters, likely Hall of Famer, right? You would say it's a pretty good case that Jason Peters is in the Hall of Fame. Although, you never know, really good offensive lineman for a long time. Sometimes they'll get to the Hall of Fame, Joe Jacoby. But you would say that he's pretty likely. Then they do some in the running or work to do. So they put him in different categories. So, for example, for the Washington football team, the artist formerly known as the Redskins, who's a lock on this roster? Well, Adrian Peterson, right? You got three rushing titles, 2,000-yard season, MVP award in years past, one of the all-time leading rushers, all-time leading touchdown guys. That's a Hall of Famer. If he retires tomorrow, Hall of Famer. If he adds to his resume, Hall of Famer. Then there is nobody in the other two middle categories, right, of likely or in the running. And this is kind of my point. It's why I bring it up. Then there's the work to do, right, where maybe if you do a whole lot from here until the end, a guy that's never played in the NFL, Chase Young is on that list because he's highly touted, and Landon Collins is the second name that's given in the work to do category, which is a low percentage. It means it puts you in the, you know, 10 to sort of 20% range, meaning that, you know, you've done enough to warrant discussion, nowhere near to the point that you're a Hall of Famer yet. So if Landon Collins just does what he's done to this stage, the rest of his career, not a Hall of Famer. If he blows up and has an unbelievable 4, 5, 6 seasons, now he's kind of in consideration. He can move to a higher category. But it's very instructive that the Washington football team does not have many guys in this regard.
So I want to come back to the other categories, the Chase Young, Landon Collins discussion. And let's just start with the lock on this roster, which is Adrian Peterson. Mm-hmm. And AP, after 2 years here, is clearly a member of this outfit in the burgundy and gold, and he's meant a lot to this fan base. But it still feels to me like we're renting someone else's Hall of Famer.
We're borrowed, yeah.
He is a Viking. That's who he's going in for. That's what Adrian Peterson is and was and will be remembered for. That's who he rushed for three titles with and went for 2,000 yards and won an MVP with. And I mean, this is one of the great running backs of his era. Mm-hmm. But it almost, to me, feels kind of cheap that our lock is a guy that just came here for the very tail end of his career, where he's going to limp his way to kind of 800 to 1,000 yards and be at the very end of his run, literally and figuratively. But that said, at least, not a team has a lock. Washington has a lock. We've got a legend in our midst. We've got a guy in the locker room when you go in with a recorder you can talk to who is going to have a bust in Canton, Ohio, and we know that, so that's pretty cool. Looking up some of the numbers this morning on AP, fifth all-time in yards with 14,216. The four running backs ahead of him in yards, Danny: Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton, Barry Sanders, and the one guy who just doesn't feel quite right, but man, is the attrition worked for him, Frank Gore.
Frank Gore.
Third all-time in
Frank
rushing.
Gore, so
you
dude.
Got Smith, Payton, Gore, Sanders, and Peterson in that order, 1 through 5. In all-time rushing attempts, Gore is also third, okay? So it's him and just some of the great players who have ever played this game at the position. Emmitt Smith, more carries than anybody else. Walter Payton, Frank Gore, Curtis Martin, Jerome Bettis the Bus, LaDainian Tomlinson, Barry Sanders, Adrian Peterson. That is the list. Eighth on the all-time list. By the way, AP and Frank Gore are the only guys that have played on more than two teams in their career. Emmitt Smith, Cowboys, Cardinals. Walter Payton, only the Bears. Curtis Martin played on the Patriots and the Jets. Jerome Bettis, the Rams, randomly, and the Steelers. We know him from Pittsburgh, not from his work with the Rams. Tomlinson, Chargers, Jets. And Barry Sanders, only the Lions. And then he's fourth all-time in touchdowns. Peterson, having moved past a couple more players last year, behind only Emmitt Smith, LaDainian Tomlinson, and a guy we haven't mentioned, Marcus Allen, on
Marcus
the all-time
Allen.
Touchdown lists. So you're, I mean, all that having been said, what does that tell you? He's one of the, what, top five running backs probably that's ever lived? Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on your criteria as well. I mean, the Barry Sanders could have added another 5,000 yards to his resume without breaking a sweat. But just
true.
Instead
Jim
of the walk
Brown,
away
we didn't
for,
really name, is certainly
right.
in that combo.
We didn't talk Marshall Faulk. If you look at total yards and receptions, like the modern running back is basically now what Marshall Faulk was. He was the prototype. But Eric Dickerson, a superstar. But so here's the point. The eras vary. You know, the number of plays run per game now is more. Offenses are faster paced. There's a million different factors, okay? Like how good a team was that you played for, like Emmitt Smith running behind maybe the best offensive line ever. Was he really better than Jim Brown was in Cleveland? I don't know. Hard for me to say. Here's the point. You don't have to go too far when you're sliding down any list that before you get to Adrian Peterson's name. He could be your one seed. I don't know that I'd agree with that, but that there's a case to be made. He could be your 7 seed. Okay, fine. The point is, he's really, really, really high on the Pantheon all-time stuff. I mean, those names, just in terms of rushing leaders, that's royalty. You know, that's anybody's Mount Rushmore running backs are going to include guys like that.
It's a good point. I mean, and I always try to clarify, and I'll say it in a different way. Most accomplished, maybe not best. Because then it's based on the numbers, and it's kind of certifiable statistically. But if I'm making a list off the top of my head, I'm going Walter Payton 1. I'm going Jim Brown 2. Barry Sanders 3. Emmitt Smith 4. And then that's when I start getting into that Peterson area. I would probably put Falk above him. Maybe he goes 5. I would probably put Dickerson even with or above him. Maybe let's say 6, and I'm just trying to see where I would slot him in. You know, maybe Peterson's after that in that 7 range. But it's a great debate, and we could have it. And it's fun to know that here he is. We get to watch him again this year. We'll see if Geis and Love can take some carries from him. But next, let's get into the second tier of this thing, which is take Peterson out of the equation. He is a known future Hall of Famer. He is a Craig Lachlan to get in. If we were to tell you that there's another player in the locker room right now who will eventually make the Hall of Fame, who are you putting your money on? Who's the next best bet here in Washington? 800-636-1067 is the number. That's next on G&D. Grant and Danny, welcome back. Well, 106.7 The Fan. We're discussing the ESPN story where they assigned future Hall of Famer likeliness every single NFL team. Adrian Peterson was the only lock 100% certain to make the Hall of Fame here in Washington. They didn't have anybody else who was likely to get there, and then you have to skip all the way down a couple categories to guys who have work to do, meaning their chances are somewhere between what they estimated was 10 and 40% likely to get in. And they listed Landon Collins, the only veteran, and Chase Young, who hasn't played a down yet. I was interested in Collins being named. I know he was a first-team All-Pro, and my guess is that, trying to get inside Barnwell's mind, that's why he listed him, meaning he was named the best player in the league at his position at some point, over a guy like Ryan Kerrigan, who's been to more Pro Bowls and has had a longer, more successful career, but has never been an All-Pro, has never been, quote-unquote, the best player in the league at his position. Kerrigan, to me, has had a better career. You know, we had Charles Mann on recently talking about his candidacy a little bit for the Hall of Fame, and Kerrigan just moved ahead of him in sacks, albeit for a team that's way less successful and a club that's accomplished way less in the playoffs than the 3-time champion Charles Mann. But, you know, Kerrigan, as far as track record and Pro Bowls and stats, is in that discussion if you're trying to find a player on this team, although I don't think he's anywhere near kind of considered a Hall of Famer. I wouldn't put Landon Collins there either, though, I guess is my point. I mean, Landon Collins, to me, isn't close. So the answer then probably, Danny, is after Peterson, there just isn't one at all in this locker room right now.
So if Collins has several years like he did a couple years ago in New York, right, where it's Troy Polamalu style, where he's forcing fumbles, intercepting passes, has a couple sacks, and, you know, is like the Sean Marion of NFL defensive fantasy football, you could start to see it. But that, to me, was an interesting inclusion as well, whereas Kerrigan will be – you know, uber consistent if he's able to get back to what he was, not this past season, but the season before, a couple more years, you'll look up and he'll be among pretty impressive company when it comes to, sort of career sack totals and pressures and fumbles and, tackles for loss and a lot of things. So that was an interesting inclusion. Would have been Trent Williams, obviously, before, the mess that happened. But, it's very telling that this is where we are. Guy that hasn't played it down and somebody that's had one really good season. And I like Collins, by the way. I still like the acquisition, even though now it's been kind of panned. But, I just keep coming back to this. It's very telling. Look at the NFC East. Look around, right? There are a number of guys in multiple categories. There's likelies on Dallas, 3 different guys. The in the running, 2 different guys. Work to do, a handful of guys for Dallas. Even for the Giants are in a better position than is Washington, just in terms of this. So it's another
way. The Eagles
have
Jason Peters as likely, Kelsey and Fletcher Cox as in the running. I mean, those guys are just amazing.
Fletcher Cox is a superstar. Superstar.
You mentioned the Giants. They have Saquon Barkley as in the running. Andrew Thomas has work to do. So they're in pretty much as bad a shape, I would say, as Washington, or maybe even a little bit worse off, honestly. without Peterson as the lock. The Cowboys have Ezekiel Elliott, Zach Martin, Tyron Smith as likely. And then they've got Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper in the running. And then they've got DeMarcus Lawrence, Gerald McCoy, and Leighton Van Der Esch as work to do. Probably the most talented team in the division in this regard.
Mm-hmm. And so we hammer this point a lot. And it's not all about stars. It's not. I mean, the NFL is a sport that, yes, you can have a star, but you still need, you know, 53 guys. You still need everybody pulling the rope in the same direction. It still sometimes comes down to a field goal attempt for a non-star, for a kicker. But you need depth. You need quality players. You need good starters. You need guys that would play for, you know, 99% of the teams in the league. But the team in Washington just simply hasn't had the upper echelon stud. It hasn't had anywhere near enough of that second tier, right, which is quality starter. It's been a lot of slapdash, a lot of like kind of, you know, plugging holes in the dam. It's you know, when your best player for a couple of years is somebody who's a Hall of Famer who made their money and their career elsewhere, it's problematic. And I think that's kind of where we are with this team. You need a Haskins to step into this void. You need McLaurin. You need a whole bunch of those guys, and it just hasn't happened here in some time.
Yeah, so here's my answer to the question. Adrian Peterson's going to make the Hall of Fame. Name another guy in this locker room who would. I mean, my answer then becomes Chase Young. And he's never played a down, and it's probably not even fair to him. Right. But if you're trying to put together odds, a percentage chance that someone can do it, twofold, it's Chase Young. One, the skills, the talent, second overall pick, the hype, the fact that he's considered generational. Two, it's also an indictment in some way on guys who have played long enough that we have a pretty good indication that it might not happen with them. So if you want me to pick a player who's played a down and you just say Chase Young's disqualified because he hasn't actually played yet, then my answer would be Terry McLaurin. Mm. McLaurin, do I think he's a Hall of Famer in the future? Probably not. But as a rookie last year, he was sensational. He had 900-plus yards as a receiver. He could be on his way to being a number one in the National Football League. If he strings together 10 seasons of playing at an outstanding level like he did last year, and he gets better during that process, and he's got some 1,300-yard, 10-touchdown seasons, he could do it. Again, if someone just hears this or takes this transcript and says, Grant Paulson thinks Terry McLaurin's going to be in the Hall of Fame, then I'm no better than some random guy on Fox Sports 1 or ESPN doing some midday TV show where they scream crazy things. Yeah. Because it's very unlikely that Terry McLaurin's a Hall of Famer. But if I'm answering the question, someone in this locker room other than AP has to be named, and I can't say Chase Young because he has not played yet, then I think you have to go with a really young, really good player. And the best one of those on this team is the wide receiver from Ohio State, Terry McLaurin.
I see what you're doing, and I think we've overlooked Ryan Kerrigan. And here's what's going to happen if this breaks the right way. Now, these are all ifs. We're talking about, you know, hypotheticals here. If Kerrigan has a few decent seasons, I'm talking about three decent seasons, he'll be above guys like Charles Haley in terms of sacks. He'll be right close to Lawrence Taylor with Robert Mathis, with Dwight Freeney, Derek Thomas, some of the stars that have played in this game. Now, I know there's more passing now than there was when a lot of those guys played, and the percentage of chance you get to rush the passer. I'm aware of all that. But when you start compiling certain numbers, there's certain things like in Major League Baseball, pretty much non-Mark McGwire or Barry Bonds or steroid era division, if you get 500 homers, pretty much doesn't matter what else you did. You're in. 300
wins, pretty much you're in. You get 3,000 hits, you're a Hall of Famer.
You're a Hall of Famer, exactly. So to me, he'll pass probably a Hall of Famer Andre Tippett this year if things go well. He'll pass Charles Haley if things go well. That's enough. I think that's the guy that you would sort of bet your money on because of what he's already accomplished in the rearview mirror. Now, if we're doing what we did this past season, then that train's over, right? But if he bounces back, he's got enough deposits in the bank where he'd have a pretty good candidacy.
So I would love it for him because all that guy's ever been is a model citizen and a mensch and a salt-of-the-earth human being, and I think he's been a wonderful representative for this organization who's a great football player who's underrated, to be honest with you, by this fan base and nationally. But therein lies the problem. Mm-hmm. He's never really gotten the respect he deserves, in my opinion, for how good he's been. And I think the Hall of Fame would be similar to that, most notably because of the team he played for. Because he didn't get to play in many playoff games. He didn't get to win playoff games. He didn't get to play in a conference championship and have a big sack that people remember in an NFC title game or a Super Bowl. And I think that will hurt him. But I hope you're right. And certainly if he can string together another 20 to 30 sacks over the next few seasons in his NFL career, he's going to have the numbers to get in. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. Tim Bontemps covers the NBA. We will talk to him next about the bubble program the league has put together and what has stood out so far. You're listening to G&D. Grant and Danny, welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. Hopefully you're enjoying all of the sport that we are being inundated with now after weeks wandering around in the desert. Tim Bontemps, you remember his work in town from the Washington Post, an NBA writer now at ESPN, joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline to talk about hoops in the bubble. Tim, really appreciate you joining us on Grant and Danny. Always love talking basketball with you. So far, seems like so good for the NBA. Are they getting the rave reviews that it seems like they are for how this bubble's working out?
Well, first of all, it's good to talk to you guys about hoops, too, after being a science reporter for 4 months. So that's definitely nice. And as far as down here goes, I mean, honestly, you know, being down here, I'm going to about 12 hours of games a day. So I'm going to admit I haven't had a chance to really see what kind of the outside perception of things is. But from my perspective, being down here, I mean, I feel like the NBA has so far had this thing go about as well as it possibly could. The virus has stayed out, which is obviously the most important thing. And as far as the quality of basketball goes, I think it's been pretty high. You know, if you told me before this thing started that there'd be all these close games, all these overtime games, very few teams sitting guys for extended minutes, especially among these teams that are, you know, at the top of the conferences and don't have a lot to play for, you know, I would have said great. So, you know, I think that so far, the league's got to feel pretty good about where this is at. Obviously, there's a long ways to go. You know, all it takes is one person to have the virus in there to kind of wreak havoc and potentially really mess things up. But, you know, as of now, I think you've got to look at this and say so far that it's definitely been a success for the league, and we're simply hoping it stays that way.
Tim, take it wherever you want here, team, individual, whatever. Who's impressed you the most?
I think you got to say the Phoenix Suns, right? I mean, they were the last team basically in here along with the Wizards, and everybody kind of mocked those two teams being included in the first place. But look at the way the Suns have played, and they come from behind and beat the Dallas Mavericks on Sunday night, I should say. I was at that game. Really impressive performance by Phoenix. And then yesterday, you know, they come in and they beat the Clippers. Devin Booker hits a game-winning shot over both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. It's about as hard a possible shot as you could make. They're 3-0. They've given themselves a chance to, you know, advance into the play-in tournament, which I don't think anybody really predicted when they got here. So, you know, that's a team with a bunch of young guys that came down here saying, look, we want our young players to be involved in important high-leverage games, and it's important for us to be here. And, you know, I think so far, a week in, you know, I think you've got to give them a ton of credit for taking every advantage of that opportunity.
Tim Bontemps on G&D. Yeah, Booker scored 35, 117-115, upset win over the Clippers with that game winner. What Luka Doncic just did was amazing to me. He went 34-20-12, youngest player in league history to go 30-20 in a triple-double. If you're putting together like a list, not to put you on the spot for the exact list, but of best players in the NBA, how high can you reasonably put Luka Doncic now? What are we talking about with him as it pertains to the best in this game?
Oh, I mean, he's got to be in the top five, right? Or right on the border of that. I mean, the Dallas Mavericks, people probably don't realize this, and I know that stats are a little inflated because of the way the game's being played right now. Dallas Mavericks had the best offense in the history of the NBA this season. And you look at Dallas's team, I mean, yeah, Chris Porzingis is really good, but he's coming back from his torn ACL still, right? This is kind of the first year he finally rounded in for me. He's really looked great down here. But, you know, really other than him, look at the guys that are on their team. I mean, it's a bunch of kind of role players and some cast-off guys, Tim Hardaway Jr., who they got as basically a salary dump in the Porzingis trade. You know, they signed Seth Curry to a good deal. You know, Dorian Finney-Smith, the guy they picked up off the scrap heap. I mean, the fact that Luka is putting up these numbers with this collection of talent around him, I mean, this isn't like, say, the Golden State Warriors a couple of years ago with four Hall of Famers on the team, right? So, yeah, I mean, look, he is a single – he is by himself in a hub for a top five or a top one offense, frankly, this year in the league. And he's 21 years old and in his second year in the league. So, I mean, I think the sky's the limit for him. And, you know, he certainly looks like a guy that's going to win multiple MVPs and be, you know, one of the best players in the league for probably a decade or more.
Tim Bontemps with us here on Grant and Danny. Tim, I know it's such a small sample, and it's so chaotic and so weird, as you mentioned. You've been a science reporter for 4 months, and now we're talking hoops again. And it's a small sample here, but has your opinion of any of the elite guys, any of the elite contenders, changed at all with what you've seen in these few games down there?
I wouldn't say too much. I wouldn't say too much that it's changed. I think, you know, take the Clippers, for example, right? The Clippers have lost two games. So, hey, are the Clippers in some kind of trouble? Well, when you look at the – when you kind of break down what's happening with them, they have you know, they've had several players out with COVID or with family issues, right? So they're playing without four or five guys, and they're hanging around in these games. So if they can get healthy, I don't feel particularly concerned that the Clippers are going to have any trouble. Same with the Lakers, right? I mean, they struggled against the Raptors, but the Raptors are really good. And a lot of people have kind of woken up to the fact that the Raptors are really good. Well, I was already on that train, so that doesn't really change my tune either. I mean, I think among those teams, I think the team that you do have to wonder a little bit about, I guess, based off these couple games, is the Milwaukee Bucks, right? The criticism of the Bucks last year in the playoffs when they lost to the Raptors and really spiraled Mike Budenholzer his whole career is that here's a guy that has kind of the perfect system for the regular season, but when you get in the playoffs, he doesn't really adjust. His teams do the same thing, which is generally allow the other team to shoot a lot of threes, and they've lost that way over and over and over again. He hasn't really changed it, right? Well, Sunday, they play the Rockets. They give up a billion threes. They lose. Yesterday, they play the Nets without three of their starters, and the Nets are terrible. As you guys know, I'm sure you watched the Wizards game on Sunday. They're not any good with their starters, and they give up 23 to them and lose to them again. I found a stat yesterday. They've given up six games with 20 or more threes this year. It's the second most in the history of the NBA, only behind this year's Warriors, who were also awful. So, look, like, do I think Milwaukee's really good? Yes. Do I think Milwaukee can win? Yes. But, you know, I think we have to see in the playoffs how Giannis is going to fare in late-game situations in the half court where their offense can bog down, and if their defense isn't going to get lit up by letting these teams shoot threes and going to town on them. So, I wouldn't say my opinion has changed with them, but I do think that these last couple games for them have reinforced some of the biggest criticisms and questions about that team going forward.
Before we let you go, I wanted to double-click on something you said, and our guest is Tim Bontemps here on Grant and Danny. The games have been really close, and because of that, people like me sitting at home are clapping like seals and we're loving it. But I want to touch on quality of play because it's been better than I expected, but I think we had like a 50-free-throw game, I thought I saw you tweet last night at some point.
That Mavs-Kings game was 50-12 in terms of free throws.
Wow. I mean, that's insane. So quality of play-wise, dummies like me have been impressed. Have you gotten more about what you expected? How would you kind of rule that?
Oh, no, I definitely think it's been better. I think you're right. I mean, I think it's a testament to these guys, right? They're not able to work out with their teams for 4 months, and they come in, and they look great, and they're in shape, and they're in sync with their teammates, and they're ready to go. I mean, to your point about the fouls, there have been a lot of fouls in these games. And a lot of free throws. It's partially why the scores are so high. I don't have a great sense of exactly why that is happening. I think you could probably attribute a few things to it. It could be, you know, rust on everybody's part involved. You could have teams being more aggressive. You could have refs reffing a little differently in a quiet arena, right? I mean, all that stuff kind of factors into as potential reasons for it. But yeah, look, I think there's little doubt that the quality of play is a lot better than I anticipated. And things have been good on that front.
Tim, we'll do an epidemiology and chemistry segment next week, so we'll book you for that, buddy. Appreciate you hopping on with us.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, be well. There's Tim Bontemps. Remember him from the Washington Post, and he's now at ESPN covering the NBA nationally. Always does a good job with us here on G&D. Double play is next. We're blitzing at noon. Remember, 1 o'clock today, Josh Harrison, the new Nat who hit a home run last night. He's awesome. If you haven't heard him do interviews in the past, really, really cool guy. Just got to the team, so we'll check in with him today at 1 right here on The Fan. Time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
So I used to roll my eyes, Jeeps and listeners. I used to just ignore it, or I tune it out, or I would just kind of shake my head when my dad would point to somebody, like an athlete on the screen, or, you know, some sort of marker where he would go, I remember his dad, or I remember when this guy was. And I just kind of, you know, it didn't process why you felt the need to tell me that. I'm watching this player. I'm watching this guy on the screen. I'm watching this game. I'm watching this sport. I don't need to know what happened in 1964. I don't need to know what happened in 1972 when this happened and the Over the Hill Gang and blah, 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 blah. He couldn't help it. I have turned into that man. I'm doing that now. I watch games. Carl Yastrzemski's grandkid, right? Where I remember like stories about Yastrzemski growing up is now great. Dante Bichette, whose entire career I remember, including going to Camden Yards super early one day, by the way, when he was a part of a visiting team. I can't remember who he was playing for. It wouldn't have made, maybe it was before Interleague, so it wouldn't have made sense that he's with the Rockies. But I remember, anyway, I remember watching him what seemed like win a bet by taking a bat, holding it in his left hand, putting a tee at home plate, and hitting the ball over the left field fence at Camden Yards. Still the craziest thing I've maybe ever seen in person, the strength of that man. His kid now plays in the major leagues. All these kids are in Major League Baseball, and I remember their dad's entire careers. And I only want to talk about that with people. I want to tell my wife. I want to tell my kid. I remember his dad played. I remember his dad. His dad played. I remember it. It's so boring, and it's so dumb and annoying, and I can't help myself. It's like this word vomit that I can't help but spew for no reason at all. Who is this benefiting? Who does it help? I just need people to know that I remember when this guy's dad played. I don't have any other comment other than that, but I find myself doing it, and I have a brand new and renewed appreciation for my father's desperate need to tell me that this building used to not be there, but now it's there now. And he remembers when this town was different, and now it's this. I can't help it, and I don't know what happens, but it happened.
You definitely become your parents a little bit. I was trying while you were talking to think of an actual example, you know, so that I could give it to you, and I don't have it necessarily. But there have been a couple times, even in the last week or so, where I would say or do something, and I'd be like, that's something that my dad used to say or do, you know? Where mm-hmm. you're like, and when he did it, you thought, why did he say that? Or why did he do that? And I do it, and I realize immediately, I'm like, I just took that from my dad. I saw him do it, or I saw him say that, and now I'm doing it. It definitely is something that happens, there's no doubt. By the way, do you realize that there are two players in Major League Baseball? This is just now adding to the we're getting old conversation, it sounds like, that we're finding ourselves in right now. Two players that were born in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
I was 10 in 1999, and I remember it like it was yesterday. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you remember Vladdy. Fernando Tatis Jr., you remember Fernando Tatis.
Yes.
So you can tell everyone about that. That's what you love to do, apparently. Both of those guys were born in 1999. By the end of this year, we're going to have someone in the big leagues probably that was born in the year 2000.
In the year 2000.
Think about that.
Oh, I've thought about it. I've thought about it hard. And I don't like it. I don't care for it. Now, shout out to Metallica. Time marches on. But man, oh man, is it. I just can't. I don't know what to say other than the simple fact that I can't help it. I can't help sharing these details that are completely unnecessary, don't affect the moment, nobody cares about them, but I have to say, Fernando Tatis hit 2 grand slams, and he was a sensation for the Cardinals. That's his dad. Like, my 6-year-old is on his iPad playing Roblox, and he doesn't care. And yet, here's me doing it. I don't know why, but it has to happen.
It's time for my double play. Danny, you can relate to this. I think a lot of our listeners can as well. Oh, that's always my goal with these double plays. I want to something somewhat relatable, right? Something people can, you know, put themselves in my shoes and experience. If you've got kids, you've probably had this happen before. So every day at 2 o'clock, right after the show ends, I go upstairs and I eat a protein bar. Every single day, Quest protein bar, out of the cabinet. I get it. It's the first thing I do. We get off the air at 1:56. It's probably in my mouth by 2 o'clock, okay? And every single day, when I eat that protein bar, the baby comes over, Madam President, wants a little piece. She's like grabbing at it. She's like, oh, let me eat this. It's like, it's not even that good. I don't even like it that much. You shouldn't want it, but she wants it. Next thing you know, the dog's asking for a little bit. They're following me all over the place. So last night, Danny, or yesterday afternoon after the show, went upstairs to eat my protein bar. I hid in the laundry room.
Good.
I closed the door. I hid in the laundry room because I don't get enough food that I like. Right. I don't even necessarily like this protein bar from Quest that I'm eating, but I need to eat it. And it's the only thing I'm eating for a few hours, and it's mine. And I don't want the baby to get any, and I don't want the dog to get any. I don't need everyone follow me around eating it. So I hid in a dark laundry room to eat my protein bar yesterday. How ridiculous.
Exactly right. It's normal. It's correct. Good for you.
Grant and Danny on the Fan V Beltway Blitz.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.